Hello and welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, a weekly podcast where we dissect political issues in the country and across the globe. This week we are looking into the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture. Last Sunday, the Sunday Times reported in its front page that the commission had subpoenaed major banks in the country for bank records relating to former President Jacob Zuma and several female members, including three of his daughters, as well as entities that they are linked to the former president as well as his family members. Now, we know that, of course, the former president has been engaged in a tussle tit-for-tat with the commission chairperson, Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, ever since last year, after he only appeared once in July and is yet to appear again with all kinds of excuses that he has been making to avoid appearing at the commission once again.
This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
Order!
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
As always, I'm not alone. Today, I am joined by Sunday Times Deputy Editor, Mike Siluma, who's joining us for the first time today. Mike, how are you?
Hi, Mwanda. Thanks very much for having me, man.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And we are joined on the other line by Sunday Times Political Editor, Sibonga Konke Shoba. And I am your host, Mawanda Mashabalala. Mike, what do you make generally? Let's start first with the Sunday Times story about the subpoena to the major banks for the bank records. What do you think that the commission wants to ascertain through this information that they've requested from the banks?
Yeah, you know, Mawanda, the interesting thing is that the whole state capture story has come out into the public domain as a political story, but actually it's a money story.
It is
about the money. So if you're wanting to prosecute people, let me just go a step back, that it's a money issue because it is about people raiding the state coffers to enrich themselves. So if you want to successfully prosecute them, you have to follow the money, as they say.
Yes.
And it's a tactic that has been done by prosecutions all over the world. Whether you want to prosecute the mafia, whether you want to the Colombian drug lords, etc.,
yeah,
it is about how do they move their money,
yes,
and where does the money end up?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So even in this case, you know, you can have a theory about what was happening, the political decisions that were being made. But to prove corruption, you are going to have to follow the money and prove that there was money that was taken out of the state or state entities and taken into the private banks or of various individuals, you know, whether they are the politicians themselves or people who are associated or their business associates.
Yeah.
So for me the whole story of state capture is now reaching its climax with the commission now looking at the financial standing or status or situation of the people who are being suspected of having benefited or who have assisted other people to benefit.
And Mr. Shoba, Mike is raising an interesting point that the state capture in its entirety is about allegations of corruption, and corruption involves money. So if we were to put it in legal terms, we would say these are financial crimes that the commission is actually dealing with here. But would you say that throughout its time, that the commission has been wasting time in political rhetoric or gossip, if I may put it that way, and now we would say that for the first time they are heading towards the right direction as it relates to corruption, which is a financial crime?
I agree with Brian Mike. We are now approaching the climax of the commission, and he's correct. Throughout the last 2 years, we've just been hearing stories, hearsay at the commission. A lot of allegations being made about people giving instructions to officials. Now we are getting to the gist of the matter, the movement of funds, because the allegation, if it's just rumors and it ends there, then you can't nail anyone because there is nothing tangible that you can actually use in court as evidence in order for you to prove that public money was stolen. But now the commission is now going, is following the money, which is really crucial, and which sort of like explains the conflict that we saw last week, the public spat between the commission and Zuma and his lawyers accusing Deputy Judge President Raymond Zondo of being biased. Last time I checked, they were going to apply for him to recuse himself. So it tells you that we are reaching that point, and it tells the story that why the fight, why Zuma doesn't want to go back. Someone who's close to the commission was saying, if he knows that there is evidence that is on the table that will be put to him about the movement of money, he won't make it there. So that's why you see this conflict, and it's going to get interesting as we move forward, and it's going to be interesting to see if he actually shows up in November.
Mm. And you know, Mawande, just as an aside, you know, just talking about money, if the whole story of money, it goes beyond just the state capture thing. Just think about it. What is the major fault line? The political fault, what is the cause of the major political fault line in the ANC itself? Mm. Where does it go? It goes back to the money.
Yes.
It is about who is in, who's eating, and who must be shafted out so that somebody else can come and eat. It's not an ideological at its root.
Yes.
There is no like serious and irreconcilable ideological fault line in the ANC.
Yes.
Fundamentally, the people become most emotional when it gets to who is going to go into it this time round.
Yes. And just being a devil's advocate, Bra Mike, on the issue of the request by the commission of these bank records, you know, someone would urge you to say, but now the daughters of the former president, I mean, where do they fit in here? They've never been implicated anywhere in the commission. Why would you want their bank records as well? Is this not, as others would call it, a witch hunt against the Zuma family in its entirety? What would be your take on such, you know, an angle when one looks at it from that angle?
No, I don't think that it's a uniquely South African issue to come up. Mm. You know, even if you go into other countries, other jurisdictions, you will find that there is this issue of politically exposed people.
Yes.
And it is people who are in a position to derive financial benefit through their political connection.
Yes,
now,
yes.
Now, the political connection can be because of membership. It can be because of blood relationship.
So it's
a generally accepted thing. You know that it needs to be looked at. You know, and every society decides how to deal with it. Mm. And I think that we're coming late to the party now. Only now are we starting to talk about, for example, in the ANC, about whether people, you know, ANC members must do business with the state, whether relatives of political leaders must be able to do business with the state. And I think we're coming late to that, you know, to that conversation.
Mm.
But it's a universal conversation, you know, that most countries have long started talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Shoba, the picking up on the last point, Abra Mike, about the issue of politically exposed people and how they benefit from the state coffers. We know that, for instance, in the ANC, there's been this raging debate lately that Primark correctly alludes to about family members of the ANC leaders now being barred from doing business. But I think the ANC had taken that decision, but the recently Khutla, I sort of sense that there was a U-turn there now with the ANC saying, no, they are no longer going that route. What do you have to make of that particular point about family members of leaders who are in political office doing business with the state? Do they have an advantage? Do they not have an advantage? And what is the correct way to move forward as it relates to that?
Maybe let me start with the point, the question that you first asked, Bra Mike, that is this overreaching? You in your statement, you said something to the effect that the daughters of the president were never implicated in any evidence that is brought before the commission. What we should not also forget, Mawande, is that there is also The commission also deals with whistleblowers who forward information to the commission about certain activities. My sense is that move is mostly influenced by whistleblowers, and you're going to see as the week progresses the stories that are going to come out about what is the commission is following. Based on information provided to the commission by whistleblowers, which is not necessarily public information. But to get back to your question about politically exposed people, I expected the ANC to make a U-turn, and I expected the ANC not to adopt that as a resolution, precisely because the state is the biggest spender, Mawande. A lot of companies do business with the state. A lot of big companies do business with the state, and ANC leaders. I was talking to one ANC leader recently, and he was saying to me, all businesses, almost all businesses, especially businesses, do business with the state. And if you are going to say to someone who's running a small company somewhere that you can't do business with the state, that means that person will struggle to survive. And that's the argument that they are making. Of course, they are not. Their relatives are not supposed to be doing business with the state. People close to our politicians are not supposed to be doing business with the state. But they have that fight back to say, if we are not doing business with the state, then how are we supposed to survive? How are our kids supposed to survive? And I think that's an issue that we should have as a society. That debate must not be left to the ANC. It must be a debate that we take up as society, we take up as the media, is also taken up by opposition parties, by everyone who's involved, to say, can politicians do business with the state? Precisely because of their proximity to power, their children's proximity to power, that alone gives them an unfair advantage. And if we leave that discussion to the ANC, we'll have what we're having right now, them coming out strongly against it and then backtracking in the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. Now, with this stalemate between the State Capture Commission Chairperson, Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, and former President Zuma, has been ongoing, as I said in my intro, since last year. I would remember that former President Zuma appeared in July for the first time at the commission. Everyone would remember that, you know, all the drama that was there with the accusations of spies and all those things. But very little was said about his involvement in the alleged state capture that took place during his reign at the Union buildings. He was meant to appear again late last year in October. He called in sick, was given another date in November last year. Again, he was attending to his other criminal trial and was meant to appear again this year, early this year, where he also called sick again, saying that he was receiving medical attention in Cuba, and was given another date just last month. And now it has really reached boiling point where there's accusations that he has leveled against the Chairperson, Deputy Chief Justice, saying that he is conflicted, he is biased, he already has a predetermined outcome about the commission as it relates to the former president. So last week, Friday, the commission had an application by the commission's legal team for the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo to, in fact, subpoena the former president to now be compelled to appear before the commission. They argued alone. The former president's legal team opted not to attend to the application. And this is how the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo decided on the application.
Requiring Mr. Jacob Gedleyihlekisa Zuma, former president of the Republic of South Africa, to appear before the commission at 10 o'clock on the 16th to the 20th of November 2020.
But Mike, will it ever end, this cat and mouse chase between the chairperson of the commission and the former president?
Yeah, no, it will end. The commission has no choice because it has got a limited time period in which it has to round up its work.
Yeah.
And I think that the strong stance being taken by Justice Deputy Chief Justice is with that in mind, you know, that this thing cannot go on, you know, forever. You know, my sense is that the commission has got a lot of other ground to cover, mm-hmm. but Zuma is central. I mean, he's almost like the spider in the web,
yes,
of this whole state capture thing. And it is essential that he's both from a point of view of fairness, but also from getting him to account.
Yes.
You know, because that's part of, you know, so he does need to be there. He does need to answer the many, you know, I don't know how many score people have mentioned him.
Yes.
You know, it's now going, I think, the other side of 50 of people who have named him as having been implicated or involved in some way. So Zondo is most likely acutely aware of that he needs to get the former president in, and he needs to juxtapose the allegations that have been made against him, you know, against his own version of what happened. So I think that it's coming to a head. I don't think that Zondo is going to back off. But also, I don't think that Zuma will want to go to jail.
Yeah.
So because that's what will happen. He can't get away with just, you know, poking his middle finger at the commission.
Yeah.
He's going to have to go there to the commission.
Mm. Now, Mr. Shoba, the former president is accusing the commission chairperson of bias. How does one accuse one of bias when, as I've just stated in introducing this segment of the show, that he has been given an opportunity 5 times now that he refused to take, but then you accuse the person who's presiding over the commission of being biased? What is your take on that particular allegation of bias?
He is clutching at straws, really, and they are just using anything that they can find. Now they are claiming there is also a conflict of interest that the judge failed to declare when Zuma didn't declare it himself when he announced the appointment. And they are also talking about how other people, there is a white baptism that they have adopted. His supporters would bring in the issue of Pravin Gordhan about how he was able not to show up at the commission and came up with an excuse, and then saying that the same is not afforded to Zuma, which is really, really, which does not hold water, because he has been given, as you have stated in your intro, ample opportunities to appear before the commission since last year, and you can see that with the stuff that is coming out of the commission, that as Pramaik was saying, he doesn't want to go and respond to those allegations, especially now that there's a paper trail of money moving around, that is what he's trying to avoid. And the issues that they're just raising really is just wasting the commission's time. Mm, mm,
mm. The other point that they've raised, Pramaik, the former president, is the issue of which has not been, they haven't revealed much detail on that point of the personal, historical, personal and professional relations that they allege make the chairperson conflicted to be able to preside over such a platform as it relates to the former president. Does it carry any water from where you are standing when you look into that particular allegation of historical, personal and professional relations?
No, I don't think that the law works on personal disagreements or personal grudges from the past or whatever. I think that the litmus test is for the accuser or the claimant, you know, to show that in the behavior of the judge, that is what he's going to have to demonstrate.
Yes.
That in the behavior of the chairperson of the commission, that the behavior, the chairperson's behavior has been unreasonable, and he has not been objective, and he has not been giving him a chance to state his case, or biased in one way or the other in the conduct of the work of the commission. If there were issues outside of that the former president feels are impacting on the ability or inability of the chairperson to do there, then he has to table them formally and say, this is what, you know, Justice Zondo once did to me when we were growing up in Matlabatini or wherever it is, or in Kandla or wherever. The onus is really on him, not on the chairperson, to deal with the issues that he's raising. But also the other consideration is that he could, not seeing that he's saying these are long-standing issues, then he then should have tabled them at the beginning of the commission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't table them at the tail end of the commission when he is now being given a date to come and account for his misdemeanors or otherwise.
Mr. Shoa, former President Khalima Mutlande says the former President Jacob Zuma is receiving bad legal advice as far as his arguments are concerned on the recusal application of the state capture chairperson. Does he have a point?
Former President has been receiving wrong advice since he was president. If you look at his government's track record of legal battles that they've gone through, they lost almost all of them. So he's been receiving legal advice for the longest of time, and right now they are not even using the law in terms of their arguments. I think their approach, if you look at his corruption trial, their approach has been about proving some kind of political conspiracy. And they seem to be adopting a similar approach here, as Bramaiko was talking about, that conflict that Zuma is now realized does exist. So he has always received wrong legal advice, and I agree with the former deputy president. Mm.
I think that we're being charitable towards him, actually, to blame the lawyers.
I think that he probably
goes and gets lawyers who are willing to argue a particular case for him.
He
will not countenance anybody who's going to tell him that.
And it's good for the lawyers' profiles, I mean, which would motivate why they take these cases.
And you'll remember in one of his cases, you know, he had to back down at the last minute. I think he was being represented by Jeremy Gauntlet or one of those very, very senior, experienced advocates, you know, because he was insisting on taking a particular route.
Yes.
And he was advised that, no, we are not able to argue that particular line that you are wanting. And at the last minute, then they backed down and he ended up having to, you know, pick up the costs. My view... You know, I don't know. I've never met him. I never sit with him when he's deciding who to choose as his lawyers or whatever. But I suspect that he's one of those leaders who will go out and want and find a lawyer who will do what he wants done politically or at a personal level. I suspect.
And Mr. Shoba, now looking at this particular case between the former president and the commission chairperson, where do you see it ending? We know now that, as we heard in the clip earlier, that he has been given dates next month to appear, and he hasn't filed the full affidavit in his recusal application, which I suspect they will file it closer to the time of appearance to delay the appearance even further. But in terms of a reading of the situation, where do you see this issue, particularly the current stalemate, going as we move forward?
Zuma will ultimately have to comply. You see, Zondo has put his foot down, and you can see that he's willing to go all the way in order for him to make sure that Zuma does come and account. And the law will have to apply, whatever laws apply to someone who's defying a judge. I think Zondo, he has made it very clear that he is going to stamp his foot down, and he's more than willing to make sure that Zuma does appear. And it will be interesting to see how Zuma tries to avoid it. And we quoted one of his lawyers in our story saying they are willing to go all the way, which means they are even willing to go to the highest court in the land for him to avoid appearing before Zondo.
The other issue, Bramak, that has emerged this week that is perhaps related to issues that pertain to state capture, that is corruption, as we were discussing it earlier, is the comments by the former public protector Tulima Donsel on the so-called corruption amnesty that has really caused a lot of, you know, furor around the country. What is your take on that issue, especially as it relates to people like the former president who have these many allegations against them that relate to corruption? I'm sure others, without even going to the detail, because I'm sure that was not a blanket statement by the former public protector about this corruption amnesty, but of course there should be qualifications as to who qualifies for it, who doesn't. What is your take just on the concept itself of corruption amnesty in a country that is ravaged by corruption like ours?
You know, Mawande, I can. There's a part of me that is sympathetic to the argument that yes. the former public protector is making.
Yes.
Because if you look at the extent and depth of corruption in South Africa, whether you're talking about your local town, you know, the smallest town, to your province, to your metro, to national, etc. You go to the parastatals. You go, it's very. I mean, you are talking. I saw a number where they were talking about 5,000 cases mm-hmm. now that the SIU has handed over. This is just SIU work, yes. right?
Yeah.
5,000 cases. Now, we have to get to a point, I think, where we're saying, yes, we've got a serious problem of corruption, but with the resources that we have as a country, you know, how much of those resources do we want to expend on dealing with people who have stolen from us, you know? Could some of those resources be better deployed, you know, dealing with NHI, dealing with, you know, housing, providing clean water, etc., to say how far do you go? Or do you choose to make an example of the most egregious cases of corruption, that you choose those and you deal with those, you know, almost to make an example of them. And then to the other people, you then invite them to come out. You know, to smoke them out, basically. You know, to say that, come out. If you come out and you declare what has happened, you will be pardoned. And obviously, it would be you would have to. It's a trade-off
for
that we as a society are going to have to make, because the reality is that we will never get to deal. We don't have the resources. We don't have the time. We don't have the capacity, even in the NPA, to prosecute 5,000 cases.
Yes.
How many prosecutors are you going to need to do that?
Yes.
How many judges? How many? You know, so I don't think we have the capacity. In an ideal world, yes, we would say everyone who's ever stolen a pen, who's ever stolen a wheelbarrow, who's ever stolen, you know, money from Eskom has to go to jail.
Mm.
But the reality, I think we're going to have to be pragmatic. You know, but we would still also need to be careful that we don't give the impression that that you can go on, that in that South Africa is a kind of society where you go on, you steal money from the, you know, from the public, and then you know that further down the line, you're going to get an amnesty.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a balancing act thing.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying we're going to have to be pragmatic, you know, to say we've got limited time, we've got limited resources. Both financial and personnel resources.
Mm. What
is the best way of deploying those resources?
Mm.
You know, is it to pursue everybody that has ever stolen anything, you know?
Mm.
Or do we go for the big fish
and
make an example of them?
Yes, yes. And Mr. Shoba, Bramaik is talking about a big fish still on the corruption amnesty. Do you think the likes of former President Zuma would be amenable to such a corruption amnesty if it were to be presented as in a trade-off to say, tell us what happened during your 9 years at the Union Buildings and we will pardon you if you come up with the facts?
Can you imagine what precedent you'd be setting if you were to do that? I don't think anyone will ever take us as a country seriously, as people who are serious about fighting corruption. And also given Jacob Zuma's record, he's not someone who's actually cooperated with the authorities. And I don't think if there'll ever be something like that, it'd be a good idea to extend it to him. He is the big fish that we actually want, and he's the big fish that we want for him to appear at the commission and for the NPA to then follow up doing their work.
But also, Mawande, you know, it is in the case of the president, the former president, it is about the gravity of the alleged crime.
Yes.
You know, it's about sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
It is about the country's economic collapse, you know, decisions that he made, the, you know, putting in the wrong people, you know, putting in who's the guy? Van Rooyen as finance minister, or Madusi Gigaba, people who were clearly and obviously not competent for those, but to advance a political goal.
Yes.
Getting into bed with the Guptas, just about handing the country over to them. I mean, this is bordering on treason.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so it you know, letting them decide who must be a cabinet minister, who mustn't be, all of those things are serious crimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I agree with Shoba that there is no way that you know, we should get to that point where we're saying, you know, we're giving him, you know, an amnesty. All he has to do is to declare that, oh yeah, I befriended the Guptas and I gave them the minutes and I, you know, I did this.
Yeah.
And then he walks away into the, you know. I do think that We need to take the approach that is taken in other jurisdictions as well. You know, I'm sure you've seen in the movies.
Mm.
When you want to go to deal with the mafia, for example, or with the mob, right? You target the boss.
Mm.
You target the boss, and then you use the people further down the line, the runners, you know, to give evidence to say, you know, I was sent to get the money. I was sent to shoot so and so. I was sent to do this and the other. And that's how you break the back of the, you know, of the problem, that you go to the, you hit the spider in the middle of the web. It's no use you, you know, focusing on the web and you leave the spider in the middle.
Well, just as we wrap up, Ramike, I say others who are pro this suggested corruption amnesty by the former public protector would argue and say, in fact, she has a point, because if you look particularly as we are discussing the former president today, looking at his case, not only as it relates to the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, but his other criminal trial that he is busy with in court now, which we know emanates from back in 2003, it's almost two decades now, those two cases combined, as well as state capture alleged crimes. And to date, there is nothing to show for it. And how much money has been spent both on the corruption trial that the state is pursuing against him, and both on this inquiry exercise that it's engaging in to establish whether there was state capture or not. And someone would say this is a complete waste of public money in itself. You're trying to get to the bottom of how public money was wasted through corruption, but the exercise in which you are doing so in itself is a waste of money, and these resources need to be redirected to service delivery. Lots of backlogs in all kinds of basic services, housing, water and electricity to the poorest of the poor, yet you are busy pursuing people that seemingly you will never catch if the 20 years that we're talking about is anything to go by. What would you say in that particular regard?
Yeah, no, I would say that we need to prioritize. We're going to have to prioritize cases and individuals. For example, the issues that have happened at Eskom, there's no way you can look away from those issues.
Yes.
You know, they're going to have to be prosecuted. So there are a number of those kinds of and individuals, you know, led, of course, by the former president. You know, you can't not prosecute. If you can't prosecute him, then, you know, how are you going to prosecute everybody else? You know, who, many of whom are saying they acted, you know, in the context of his, you know, culture of doing things or on his instruction,
yes,
you know, implied or otherwise. So I would say that, yes, let's not waste resources, let us be efficient in how we deploy those resources. Yes, but also there's the challenge, you know, that if you try to do everything in this case, you're going to have huge backlogs like we have now.
Yeah.
And once you've got those kinds of huge backlogs, the evidence goes missing.
Yes.
Witnesses disappear.
Yes.
They die.
Yes.
They can't recall. Genuinely,
yes,
some people will not recall. You
yes.
know,
yes.
If you asking them about things that happened 25 years ago, you know, if you ask them, you know, what shirt was, what color shirt was Mawande wearing on the day 25 years ago?
Yes.
Most people, memory fades.
Yes.
So the evidence starts to become more and more tenuous,
yeah,
is, you know, the longer, you know, the time
goes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I would say that maybe we need to, you know, just be more efficient,
yes,
and do the amnesty thing, and, you know, to get the money and,
yes,
understand that it is really to trace the money,
yes,
and get as much of the money back as we can. But in terms of the people who are prosecuted and punished, we need, again, I would say that you need to go for the most egregious cases, like Eskom, for example.
Yes.
That you do need to, or SAA, or PRASA, for example, you
yes
know, where a lot of money was stolen.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, that's it. That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much, Bramike. Sunday Times deputy editor and Sibonga Konke Shoba, the political editor of the Sunday Times. We can talk and talk until the cows come home, but we will keep on observing these issues, in particular the State Capture Commission of Inquiry, which we hope will really wrap up soon so that we get to hear indeed what is the solution going forward when the Deputy Chief Justice, who's the Commission Chairperson, issues the report, recommendations and findings, and we find a way forward as a country, and the country can focus on much more burning issues like high unemployment, especially among the youth, reigniting our economy, which has taken a huge knock because of the lockdown emanating from the coronavirus pandemic. That's it for this week. Thank you very much to everyone who continues supporting our podcast. My name is Mawande Amashabalala. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.